Dave, I got to talk to you about my Labor Day yesterday, how I spent my Labor Day.
Okay.
So we had decided, we moved into the house, and this was going to be my day to, we've been, you know, slowly getting unpacked and stuff, and we've got, the house is wonderful, except we don't have any photos or pictures hung. And I wanted to go around. I bought a special tool to hang pictures.
It's called the hammer.
Is that what it's called? I've been it's using called, the wrong
yeah,
end of it.
Introduction to 101 home ownership. Okay.
Yes. Oh, and I've got drywall in some places. Not all over, but there's some places of drywall. I've never experienced drywall in 20 years. It's all been plaster walls.
Oh, yeah.
I'm scared to death to hammer a nail because I don't want, it's finally nice. I don't want to ruin it, you
right,
know?
Right, right.
But anyway, that was on my list of things to do. So I was doing a little bit of straightening up and cleaning out the garage and getting things started, getting things out of the garage. And my wife says, come upstairs, I need your help. So my wife has one of those Nespresso espresso makers.
The pod coffee machines. Yeah,
yep,
yeah, yeah.
Yep, from Nestle.
And, from Nestle. Nestle. What planet are you from? Nestle. It's Nestle. It's one of the biggest corporations in the world, Brad. Nestle. Good God. Nestle.
I dropped the L. Big deal. What
it's
the?
From that shoe company. Nyko. You know. Nasty, dear God. Oh.
Anyway, she's got this dumb, I've got a percolator. I'll use my percolator any day. She's got this thing for her fancy coffee. Do you have one of these?
I do. Although I got to say, my wife recently, not that we need to go down this road, but my wife recently got a French press.
Yeah.
Oh my
Those
God.
Are
going,
good too.
Going from a pod coffee back to a real way to making coffee, mm-hmm. It's so much better. It's yeah. so much better.
It really is. Well, do you have the little aluminum cups that you're supposed to use for those little Nespresso machines, the little, because you can't put a coffee cup underneath there. You've got it. We bought these special aluminum cups, just a little cup that's flanged at the top, to use in these espresso machines. It fell down into the garbage disposal. If the diameter
it has wedged perfectly in there.
If the diameter of the garbage disposal is 2 inches, the flange at the top of this cup is exactly 2 inches. It's
oh,
a perfect
no.
fit,
Bradley.
And it's down at the bottom, like it's laying on its side in the bottom. But between that and the, you know, those rubber fingers that come down from a garbage disposal to keep
yeah,
stuff
like
from
the,
shooting
the,
up.
Yeah, the things that basically decide keep things from flying back up at
yeah.
you. Yeah.
Between that and the fact that it is a perfect fit, she can't get it out. And so I come in and I get a needle nose pliers and I get all these tools. She called me at 1 o'clock. I was still working on it and sweating, sweat dripping off of my nose, you know, just and getting angrier and angrier. I'm like, we're going to throw this fucking cup away. We're going to find the other cup that's the same size. We're going to throw that away. And then I'm going to throw the machine away and you can just drink coffee, you know, because I'm a very, very rational
yeah,
person.
Yeah, it sounds like you're handling this well.
Yeah,
this is good. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's calm. It's controlled.
Oh, yeah. I've got mindfulness going on from I'm slopping over with mindfulness when we're doing this. So I've got the needle nose pliers, because it's such a perfect fit, as soon as you start to get it out, the ledge of the garbage disposal pushes the pliers out of the way. It slips out and it's gone again.
Oh, for God's sakes. So you almost have to design a tool to get it out.
It's impossible to get it out. And I'm using all kinds of stuff. I'm trying to put real thin skewers down the side to kind of leverage it. Nothing. I'm putting my hands in, pushing out, and trying to lift.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. We had some glue traps because it's fall, and every fall, the mice try to get into the house. Every fall, they find a way. Even with the house, there's fewer ways to get into the house now, but they still found a way because, you know, life finds a way. And so I had some glue traps.
Finds a way! Thank you, Jurassic Park. All right, keep going.
So I rolled up some, because that glue on the glue trap is very powerful.
By the way, for those that are following at home, what's now stuck in Brad's disposal is not only a cup, there's now some pincers that have been stuck in there, there's skewers, yep. There's some glue.
And glue.
Yeah, so now Brad has compounded the problem by 15 times.
Okay, the worst. On. I've rolled up the glue traps to put it in there thinking if I stick it, I can lift it. No. Nothing. It's 2 hours, 2.5 hours. I'm working on this thing.
Oh,
I'm not
God.
Getting anywhere. Finally, and by the way, now we've got to call a plumber, and it's going to be $150 to get this guy to come out, laugh at us, and they're going to have to take the garbage disposal.
You're going to have to come from the south, yeah.
Out, yeah, to yeah. get. And that's something I am not qualified to do. I will definitely kill myself or flood the kitchen if I try to do this myself. And I get my son over, my 18-year-old. And first I torture my wife by, okay, come over here. Together we're trying to do it, nothing. I get my son to come over because he's got these beautiful, long, slender fingers. He, you know, like piano player fingers. And I'm like, come over and try to do these things, try to do that. We can't get it. And finally, I'm like, we can't be done. I said, listen, we'll just call the plumber tomorrow. We'll have the plumber come out. We'll deal with it. It isn't the end of the world. We'll be fine. We'll just pay the plumber. So I go back into the garage. And I start cleaning out garage stuff like I was doing. I'm in the garage all alone with my back turned to the world, right? All of a sudden, out of nowhere, my younger son, Max, comes in and says, Dad! And I go, ah! Because I shout when I'm when I'm surprised. I make a shout that rattled the windows above, right? I turn around and I said, what could be so important that you would walk up behind me and scare the living shit out of me? He goes, I got it out. And he holds up the cup and he's got it in his hand. He got it out. After 2.5 hours of me sweating off
so,
my face.
You leave a child alone for 5 minutes.
5 minutes. I hadn't.
What Brad Geiger took 2.5 hours of cussing and sweating. A child did in 5 minutes.
And all he did, I mean, he did the same thing. He put his hands in from the inside.
Except
pulled his
he
hands
has much
out.
Smaller, more nimble He's hands.
Got, yeah, and
not
also,
those meat hooks that you've got on you.
not these smoky link sausage fingers I've got. He goes in and also better patience than me.
Yeah.
He
yeah. goes
and he, because it was a patience thing. It was centimeter by centimeter.
Right.
And of course, I would do that 3 times. It would fall, clank
against
the bottom.
Because you would get to, like, I'm close. Pull quick.
Yeah. And done. And he just, like, micrometer by micrometer, he got it up and pulled it out, saved us $150 with this cup. And of course, the first thing he hears from me is me yelling at him. So I feel like a fucking tool. And so I said, well, all right, listen, go up and get my wallet.
I was just about to say, what new Switch game did he get bought for him?
I said, you just earned $20. and by the way, yes, we're having ice cream before dinner. Yes, we're going out to your favorite restaurant that we never go to because it's not delivery. Dad's got to leave the house and he hates doing that. Today is Max Day. We're doing everything Max because that little shit pulled out a cup that saved me $150 freaking dollars.
What sucks too is I was immediately thinking, like, well, go get the most powerful magnet you have in the house, but it's aluminum. You can't even use a magnet.
I tried the magnet. I tried straws. I tried skewers.
Yeah, like,
I tried
because I was thinking, like, could you create a suction with a vacuum down there? And like,
read about that. A lot of people broke their vacuums trying to do that.
Yeah, because a vacuum, you got to have a unique kind of vacuum system to create a permanent suction.
Yep.
Oh man.
Because I'm going out on watching YouTube videos from people saying I dropped the cup down because it's not an uncommon thing to drop a cup down into that.
No, of course. Yeah, everybody
but
drops
this
things down.
This was absolutely.
It was literally
exactly
the perfect physics
to
fill that space. Yeah.
Yeah.
So can I tell you the one thing, and maybe this is relatable for other people listening to the show, the one thing that I do with garbage disposals in the sink is because there was an unfortunate accident once. Every time I have to do it now, I have to say out loud, use the non-drawing hand, use the non-drawing hand, use the non-drawing hand. And I go down with my left hand. I never anymore let my right hand go down in there because I'm like, that's the moneymaker. I can't learn to redraw at 46. I've got to use my left hand because I can go through life with a stumpy left hand. But
you had an unfortunate accident?
Brad, there's...
You turned the fucking garbage disposal on your hand?
The switch itself was lodged in a way that I didn't realize because the object itself had been holding it in place.
Oh my God.
Oh, Brad, it was I saw my life flash before my eyes as that thing started to spin again, and no hand has moved out of the way faster than my right hand. And it was one of those things where you kind of sit on the kitchen floor by yourself going, oh Jesus, oh Jesus, oh Jesus.
All of a sudden you're doing breathing exercises on the kitchen floor.
It was like a near-death experience where you get the shakes where you're like, that was not good. Not good. So on that note, I want to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about home maintenance.
And making a fool of yourself from home maintenance. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, the cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and the co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. And you have some exciting news for us, Brad, for this week's show. A little something special for Comic Lab.
This is so great. I love when we get a chance to do this for so many reasons. And I'm just going to jump right into it. On August 24th, a Comic Lab episode posted. And the name of it was Tell Us Your First Time Story Printing a Book. And in that episode, 13 months ago, we took the following question from a Patreon backer. It went like this. How have you coped with building a sustainable comics career that is your entire source of income and then becoming burnt out with the workload and or the subject matter of the work itself? And we say, if you remember, Dave, we spent a long time talking about that because there was a lot of stuff to unpack there. There was a lot of advice and there was a lot of shared pain in all of that.
So, Brad, I went back and listened to it, which I don't normally do for a show that old. And first of all, it was kind of fun to listen to our this is stupid, but kind of fun to listen to our own show as though I wasn't a part of it because I had forgotten everything about it. So it was as though we were our audience. And it was a really lovely conversation about how all artists of all stripes eventually get to a point where the thing that they loved, the thing that was cherished by them, the spark that had fired them up for years, suddenly dwindles down to an ember. And you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. And is there something wrong with my heart? And what's wrong with me that I don't want to do? And we talked about how, like, that's happened with me with Sheldon. That's happened with me with Drive. That's happened with you with Evil Inc. and Greystone Inn. And how that is a universal. And how we know professional cartoonists. Of whom they were in the pantheon for us growing up that had that same burnout. And how to handle it. And it was, it's nice to address a moment like that where, you know, a very human and real moment that we can all feel the sadness, frankly, of the thing that was powering us suddenly becomes almost a drain or a forced moment that it brings no joy, you know?
Yeah. And we ended it up basically by saying, listen, check in with us. We don't disappear.
To the question asker. Yeah.
Yeah. And we said, let us know how things go. Cause we want to know how you're doing, how things go. Right. And drum roll, please.
Oh, my belly. That's all I had available. I'm using my belly. That's all I had. No one wanted to see that on the video. Sorry, everybody.
And he's wearing a striped shirt. The ripple effect was amazing. The amount
of undulation. Let me just tell you, quarantine has not been kind to me. The amount of undulation that was happening right there.
Well, without any further ado, she's here. Ladies and gentlemen, Erica Moen is joining us this week.
Erica Moen is here. Erica Moen of Oh Joy Sex Toy. How are you, Erica? It's lovely to see you.
I'm doing so great now, 13 months later.
That makes my heart so happy to hear. And you wanted to come and basically give us an update. In other words, we're going to go back through it. We're going to talk about about the burnout, what brought you to the burnout, and we're just going to go through the whole thing to the extent that you're comfortable sharing, of course, because we want to know. We want to know what happened, how you got through it, and where you are now.
Okay.
Okay, so let's start here. You were burnt out. You were in a point in
August. So let's start here. You were burnt out.
It was August of 2019, and mm-hmm. you found yourself in a really difficult space that a lot of creators find themselves in. But it was intense. It wasn't just, I'm kind of not feeling it this week. This was intense.
Yeah. Oh, the ideas aren't coming as fast. It wasn't just that.
Right. So talk to us about that.
Okay, yeah. So August 19th, I was in a super duper bad place. And let's back up.
Yeah.
I have been doing comics on the internet since I was about 15 years old. Wow. I am 37 now. So that is literally over half of my life.
Hold on, using my liberal arts math, that's more than 3 years.
it's like five.
Guys, I'm pretty good with my liberal arts math. I'm going to be honest here. Okay, no. So 15, wow, that's amazing. I'll keep going. Okay, yeah. Yes.
Right? So, and I'm the first generation that has grown up since adolescence with the internet. Now the next generation has grown up literally from day one with the internet. But I was of the generation where you just hit teenagerhood barely, and hey, here's this internet thing. And it was like brand new and a lot more friendly, aside from the pedophiles you're supposed to watch out for. But other than that, and I would just do these silly, stupid little autobio comics and put them on the internet and find people. And I got positive reinforcement for that. So I kept doing it. And then I did an autobio series for a while called Dar. And then I went on and my husband and I started Oh Joy Sex Toy, which was sex education and sex toy review and just basically anything that has to do with sex and sexuality. Mm-hmm. And we've done that for 7 years now. And
wow, has that really been 7 years?
I know, right?
Like, I'm sorry, time flies. Jeez, geez, 7 years.
Like, seriously, in my head, it's like, I guess maybe it's been like five-ish, but no, it's seven. It's like coming up on eight. Mm-hmm. And so I've literally grown my entire young and adult life has been spent making comics for the internet. It's literally mm-hmm. the only thing I know how to do to support myself. I have no other job skills.
And it's something that has been very public. It's been something that's
very
been a lot of your life, more than half of your life, you've shared of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. And I think adding to that moment that we'll come to in August of 2019 is that not only had you found success with it, but it had become the pillar of your economic and financial basis in life, right? Like it was the financial pillar of your life.
And not only was it the financial pillar of my life, it is also the financial pillar of my husband's life. Yeah. It is both of our more than full-time job is making Oh Joy Sex Toy, and both of our incomes, that's it. That's how we support ourselves. Right. And like, we do it pretty well. We have a pretty comfortable lifestyle, which is for a cartoonist, that's like being a millionaire.
Yes.
Well, I should share this since you say you have a pretty comfortable lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Brad and I are recording from what can only be described as a troll's den right now. Like I'm in a dark closet with moving blankets around me.
Yes.
Brad is underneath a plastic table with a blanket around him.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Erica is in the most sun-dappled artist studio surrounded by gorgeous yellow light and art. Like I can see all the art behind you. And meanwhile, Goblin and his twin over here are going, we're also cartoonists.
It's like talking to the queen.
I know. Meanwhile, it's literally like yellow light falling across her face, and we're like, we're also cartoonists. We also draw.
To be fair, you guys are going to have much better quality audio than my big echoey.
I'm just reinforcing that you have built a very comfortable life. Because it's one of those things we always say is that like when you've made it in cartooning, you have essentially beat the odds. It's like it is like making it into the NBA when you're able to build a career in cartooning. It's a rare and wonderful thing, so it should be celebrated as an accomplishment. You know,
it's one of those things where I've been doing this my entire life, and I still actively don't trust this, and I don't believe this, and I feel like it's going to be taken away tomorrow, and that somehow I snuck in here, it was a mistake in the accounting room or something, and like it was a clerical error. Because like also I'm good at what I do, but I know and I work with at my studio Helioscope here in Portland. I work with dozens of cartoonists who are so much better than me. And I know so many cartoonists who work harder than me, who produce better, smarter comics that are better illustrated. And it's just like, I'm the one who gets to have this.
Believe me, Dave feels that way every time we get together for Comic Lab.
I appreciate, even when there's a guest, he's got to get the shot in. He's got to just, I mean, listen, he's not wrong. I will say this. There was one time, I don't know if you both know Tony Cliff. There was one time I was playing pool with Tony Cliff. And for whatever reason, he was gifting me a drawing. But he was drawing it while we were playing pool. Like, every time he would take a shot, he would go back, and then he would go finish the sketch. And they would take a shot and keep doing the sketch. And he drew this thing that was prettier than anything I could ever draw, Erica. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you drew that while you were playing pool with a beer in your hand. And how can I ever be as good? So I know what you're feeling about Helioscope, that like you walk in there and you're like, ha, I'm just not as good as these people. Because we all have that imposter syndrome. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. Brad had to get that insult in and we interrupted you. So
it was worth it.
That's right, it was. So you were saying you've been doing this for such a long time, but still you felt like an imposter.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like it was a clerical error, you would say. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a clerical error that I get to do this as a full time. Not only I, like also the other scenario with many cartoonists who get to do it as a full time job is they have a spouse who has a traditional job that has the health insurance.
Right.
And here it is, like these dumb cartoons that I drew about my life, about me sharding. Yeah. Like this is it's how I met my husband. He read those comics and was like, hey, you seem interesting. And I married him. and now he runs the business of these comics.
Yeah.
In addition to co-writing, and he colors them. Like it's very, Ojoy Sex Toy is very collaborative.
Can I tell you in a way that maybe this is comforting, maybe it's not? I had not thought about this until you really started to elucidate this, that my entire business is contingent upon me making little marks on paper. And my God, that feels so, what's the word? So delicate and like breakable.
Ephemeral,
yes, Brad.
Yeah. Like,
and so the way you describe that has now given me terror. So thank you for that. No, but you're right.
We'll be back with Dave on the show in another 13 months.
But like, but I guess what I'm saying is, as I'm holding this pen, like this doesn't feel like it should pay a mortgage. You know what I mean? Like doodling on a piece of paper doesn't feel like it should buy groceries. But it does. And then if you let your mind fall into that path of like, oh God, this is all critical and contingent upon me making these little marks on this paper, that adds this whole unique amount of pressure onto a problem of the already existing with burnout and that kind of thing.
I guess so we're still setting up.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I'm jumping ahead.
No. So my brain, like, because you say something, I'm like, oh, I want to talk about that. And I'm like, wait, I have to go in order, though. So my husband and I, we work full time on Ojoy Sex Toy. It's everything. We bought a house. It's like with comic money, we're talking about dildos money. Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Like, making a living on comics is super rare and hard.
Right.
Making a living doing sex education?
Yeah.
And sex toy review?
Right.
Who does that?
Right.
You.
There's no path for that. You know what I mean? There's no like career counselor that don't go, well, you could also do comics with sex toys. That's also possible.
Like you know where the money is.
Have you considered dildos?
We get these checks from sex toy companies, from affiliate sales that our site generates for them.
Yeah.
And I call them dildo dollars.
That's funny.
That's good cold hard cash.
Talk about checks that are totally different from what Sheldon earns and how Sheldon earns money.
This is very different.
Sorry, I don't know why that made me laugh. I just imagine it's like when you started to see, I don't know if you guys remember when like Hello Kitty started to license in Japan sex toys like 10 years ago. And everybody was like, wait, what? Hello Kitty? I was just imagining like if Sheldon started getting that kind of money, was like, wait a minute, this feels wrong. Something's not right here.
Which is not a tagline that you need for a sex toy company. This feels wrong. You're going to drive that whole company into the ground, Dave. You're not the marketer for this. Leave that stuff to Erica and me.
But so I'm sorry, I keep knocking us off topic. So the checks are coming in. So you have built basically, and I think it is worth acknowledging, an impossible career path that you have successfully built for yourself, and happily so. And everyone is amazed by it, Brad and myself included, that it was even possible. You know, like, mm-hmm. It's great. It's all cartoonists are like, this is amazing. And then what starts to happen for
my
you?
My soul died?
Yeah.
Okay.
So in that I've been doing this since I was 15 years old.
Right.
When you are a queer young woman talking about herself and her sexuality and experiences and sex and all that personal stuff,
yeah.
It pisses some people off. People find it offensive. They think you're doing something wrong. They oppose to your existence. And so I've had over a decade's worth of really intense harassment and smearing and
and I'm just going to jump in because this is a part of your story that we're very familiar with, right? So I don't want you to get involved in that conversation because I know that when you talk about it, it just adds more fuel to the fire and gives people who are already being mean to you mm-hmm. more things to be mean to you with, yeah. gives them more hammers to throw at you. So we're going to take that. I'm going to make a decision.
Gives them more hammers to throw at you. That's a very specific phrase, Brad. Although I suppose that probably feels like what it feels like.
I was like, yeah, that's very apt. Yeah. Well played.
So I don't want you to give him any fuel on this show,
but needless to say, it's a decade's worth of abuse that adds up, right? And that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's not just like, oh, the internet. It takes a toll in your real life. It crosses over into real life, and it's been really soul shredding for me. Really, really damaging.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that going on, and I had this comic that was both of my husband's and my livelihoods. And then, I just realized how bad this is going to sound. But, I had two books dropped in my lap that my husband and I had to work on, and it was too much. And the reason why I was saying like, oh, this sounds bad. It's like, what? I had too many incredible opportunities presented to me. I had too many gifts given to me, but the workload was just insane.
Not only that, in your particular, like every now and again, I'll walk down into the living room and I'll say, you know what? I should be up there working on Evil Inc. right now. I feel like a lump. I'm just not going to do it. I need to take, and it's usually when I say that my wife says, well, that's exactly the time that you shouldn't be working on Evil Inc. Come on over here, sit next to me. We'll watch something on TV, or we'll sit out on the porch and complain about the neighbors. You know, we'll do something that we enjoy to do together. And but she gives me that right. You know, every now and again, when I need to have somebody give me permission to not be productive, she's there for me. And she's there to also make sure that not too many of those days string in a row. That's another thing altogether. For you and your husband, it's a different thing because you're both in the same thing. It's a lot different for your partner to say, well, you're right, you shouldn't be productive today, because your partner is the one saying, wait a minute, I know when this deadline's coming up, I know we got X, Y, and Z. It's a different situation.
If I don't get my work done, he can't do his work.
Right.
It's not just a decision.
A workflow thing, yeah.
Yeah, like if I stop, the machine stops.
Yep.
So here we are. We're working on two books simultaneously and doing our comic.
Yeah.
And my soul is destroyed. Mm-hmm. And I just became, I was just in a really bad place. And I could still be high functioning, which is could still go to work. My productivity was very reduced, but I was still working.
Faking it, for lack of a better phrase, right?
I mean, I was doing it. I was doing it with a destroyed soul.
And right. Okay, and I see what you mean.
And I was still going and seeing my friends. I was still socializing. I was still going and exercising. So, I was still performing all the requirements of being a functioning adult.
Yeah.
But I just, I was just dead inside. I was completely, I was just dead inside.
You knew something was wrong.
Yeah. And it had been wrong for a long time, but it just really, really, it's like the boil just reached ahead finally.
Yeah.
And I went to go check it. And it's a physical thing too. It's not just like, I feel sad. I just exhaustion, just like not, I would have to crash and just lay on the couch and I wouldn't, I couldn't move. And I remember, I remember my legs giving out on me and I literally couldn't stand back up because it was just extreme stress, it turns out. Or at least that's the theory. And I would get these tingling feelings running up and down my arms. There would be lots of throwing up bile. This was a big thing. This wasn't just I don't feel inspired.
Sure,
right,
sure.
Right.
There was suicidal ideation, which is not to say I was going to go be suicidal. I wasn't going to try anything, but it was very, very much I really don't want to be alive. If I could just get hit by a car right now, I'm at peace with that. I hope I'd be cool with that. If that happened, I hope that happens. That kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so, did that feeling ever get vocalized to loved ones, and or were you still kind of at that point holding it in, I'll keep this to myself, kind of a thing?
My entire life, I've had that as my baseline mode of existence. I shouldn't be alive in the first place, and if I die prematurely, that's okay. I'm not really afraid of that happening. So Matt knows that. But then the intensity of that belief was just ramped up so high. So high.
As the pressure cooker, I'm sure, kicked on. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it felt like there was no way out.
Well, there's also there's no joy to kind of cut the mood of that. You know what I mean? If work is no longer bringing joy, and then that in turn bleeds into the relationship, which is not bringing joy because you're both stressed about that. And then working out, going to the park, going to the movies, all of that is colored by I'm sure that has to color all of that, you know, that.
Well, I felt dead inside. That is exactly how it felt inside. It felt like I was just moving around this body with a lead core in it.
Yeah.
So I went to see my shrink, my psychiatrist, and that is the person who distributes my medication for brain stuff. But P.S. I'm bipolar. I guess I should mention that. So I went in to check with her, being like, dude, do my meds need to be adjusted? Because, this is not good.
Right.
Yeah.
And I talked to her, and at the end of the session, she was like, okay, buddy, I've got a choice for you. Either I want you to enroll in the intensive outpatient program at the hospital. I was like, say what now? Yeah. And she's like, or I would like to have you hospitalized. And
what kind of a choice is that?
The most gentle choice possible. Yeah.
So I got enrolled in the intensive outpatient program at my local hospital, and I didn't know what that was at the time. And for your listeners who may also not know what that is, it's a step down from being actually hospitalized, which is where you are admitted to a hospital.
Physically in the hospital, yeah, kind of a thing.
Yeah, you're okay. Physically in a hospital. You're spending the night there. And gotcha. Then you participate in these programs and stuff. And you're removed from your outside environment.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Intensive outpatient means you go to the hospital for these programs, and then you go home afterwards.
Right.
So
right.
I'm still living at home. I'm still going to work, well-ish. Mm-hmm. It is intensive, so it's a full day. So it's from 9 to 3:30. Like, it's like going to school.
Right. And then would I be correct in guessing that by the time you get home at 3:30, you're a little bit drained?
Huh. Oh, buddy.
Oh my God, I bet. Yeah, geez.
Yes.
So it's not like you're coming home at 3:30 and hitting the drawing board, right?
Actually, yeah. Yes, I was.
Oh, really? No. Wow, really?
I had two books, dog.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Yeah,
I would go to the hospital from 9 until 3:30. Not every day. I could only afford to go twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wish I could. Like, I would have benefited from going 5 days a week.
Yeah.
But my insurance,
thanks, U.S. healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the best. Yeah. Okay.
No, and that's a whole other story.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so twice a week I would go to the hospital, and then I would afterwards 3:30, I would take the bus downtown to Helioscope, and I would work on my book. One, I alternated. I didn't work on both at the exact same time. I alternated mm-hmm. them. Yeah. Like a reasonable person.
From a logistical standpoint, did you talk to the people for whom the books were due or you know, the planning of it and say like, hey, I'm going to need a little more time, or were you still trying to hit the original deadlines?
I was already late.
You were already late. Okay.
To be fair, one of the publishers, because I'm a millennial. I was documenting all of this publicly, like mm-hmm. Instagram moment, going to the hospital.
Yeah.
And
I remember that. I remember that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've said this 100 times to you, to your face. I think your courage is something that you stand second to nobody in my estimation for just raw courage for all the reasons that we've already talked about. But yeah. Then here you were doing this thing that that I personally would have been very self-conscious about, and you're like, hey, guess what I'm doing? Boom. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
It's something that I absolutely love about you.
Well, because all three of us, I think, would want to... Oh, I'm sorry, Erica. I was just going to say, all three of us would want to have the stigma of that sort of whole conversation removed from public life. And here you are actually doing it in a way that, to Brad's point, I think both Brad and I would have still hesitation about, in the sense that we're just more, I don't know, insecure or shyer. I don't know what the word is, but
what you are braver than we are. Well, I mean, like, and I get told... I'm brave because of the autobio comics I do that talk about deeply personal things. And like, mm-hmm. I shared going to the mental health program, and I shared that very publicly. And I appreciate people saying it's brave. That's very kind, and it makes me feel good. But also, I think it's compulsive, and I think it's an outreach of my mental health not being the best. Oh, interesting.
Okay, I see what you mean. That it itself is a strategy towards, not survival, but...
Yes,
towards,
actually. Yes.
Towards, mm-hmm. towards balancing out whatever you're feeling at that moment is mm-hmm. to share it. Yeah, okay, I see that.
Yeah, it's not necessarily that healthy. And, like, bravery is when you evaluate a situation, and you're like, yes, I shall make this decision, even though I know there will be consequences. And what I do most of the time... is just like, this thing happened, click share. Like, that's not brave. That's stupid.
Yeah.
And well, it's gotten me into so much trouble.
But anyway, you were saying, though, that your publisher saw the social media post and so was aware that things were happening. And yeah, did they reach out to you?
Yeah,
or did
they reached out to Matt and me, and they're like, hey, do you need more time or something? Ooh, are you okay?
Yeah.
And it's like, we just, you know, it's kind of insane when I look back on it. But Matt and I were just like, we just want to get this done. We want to be done with this. We want to get the boulder off the back.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, yes, there were delays because of what I was going through, but we did try as much as we could to stick to keep hitting our deadline and getting it done. Because getting it done would be a relief of of an immediate pressure stressor that was causing my current state.
Right, right. It would make you feel better to get this off your back.
Yeah. Whereas, like, if I'm going to go through the program and take time off of the book, and it's like, well, okay, as soon as I get out of here, though, I'm going to have to go back to the book. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
So I just did both at the same time.
Can I ask one more question, Brad, before we move on? I want to say, do you think some of the pressure of that book was the fact that it was due to a third party? And I mean, not due in a causal sense, but due in a deliverable sense. That you were responsible to a third party for producing a book, not responsible to you and Matt for producing a book.
Maybe like a tenth. I'm sure that was somewhat of a factor, but it was just the workload. It was the amount of emotional and physical labor that was going into producing two books at the same time, and one of those books being a lot harder than the other as well.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics.
So, Erica, you check yourself into the hospital.
Yeah, well, I don't check myself into the hospital because I am an outpatient.
Right.
Grandpa has some trouble listening, Erica. Let's just.
No, that's fine. Because, like, I honestly didn't know the difference when I started. I didn't know what an outpatient was and an inpatient was, and so, like, don't edit this.
Then we won't. So, but tell me what it is. Tell me what that first day is like, because your head had to be spinning.
Yeah. So that first day was like going to the first day of school. I very distinctly, because I even had like my backpack.
oh, my heart.
Well, because I was going to go to work afterwards.
Yeah, so of course.
Can I ask, did you have snacks in the backpack?
Yes, I did.
Oh, God. Oh, you had snacks in the backpack.
Because if I get hungry, my blood sugar goes down. So mm-hmm.
Of course. Oh, God. This is a whole image. A backpack of snacks. Oh,
and God. Mind you, it's not like anybody else had their backpack with them. It was just me with my backpack and my snacks and my books and my stuff.
Oh, my heart.
And all of a sudden, you get that voice in your head. Did you bring enough to share?
Honestly, it was the, am I in the right classroom?
Yeah.
Am I sitting in the right place?
Right.
I supposed to sign in somewhere? Oh, no. I signed in the wrong slot.
Yes, all those stresses that come wafting back from your days in school.
Yeah.
And just like the first day of school, I picked out my outfit the day ahead of time.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
Oh, my heart.
Laid it out.
I can't take this anymore. Okay, so you're there, and it is a small group, I'm assuming, or how big is the group, or is it one-on-one sessions at first?
Yes. I'm trying to remember. How did this all go? and also, the intensive outpatient program, IOP, is quite a mouthful, and it's not very much fun to say, and so Matt and I call it space camp. So I was going to space camp with my backpack and my snacks.
I love that. That's amazing. That's great. Okay, keep going. Space camp, yes.
So I shall be referring to IOP as space camp for the rest of this conversation.
Gotcha, yeah. Okay.
You show up at space camp. You've got a group therapy for most of the day. And there's probably about a dozen to Yeah, like a dozen-ish people. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's multiple rooms that each have a dozen-ish people. So you're in group A, group B, group C. And then there's multiple classes a day mm-hmm. that are teaching you different coping skills. And this is kind of just the triage stage. You have people right. in here who some people have just come out of being hospitalized. They have been gotcha. Living in the hospital going to these programs. And now they still are doing intensive programs, but now they can go home at night.
Right.
So some people are coming fresh out of being hospitalized. Some people are like me and their psych said, buddy, you need extra help.
Mm-hmm.
But basically you're at a level of being able to function in a group, and hear things and take it on. Some people are not at that level yet when they've been hospitalized. And there was one lady who had just been released from being hospitalized and she was in the program. And she was clearly not ready yet we're filling out these forms and she would just stand up and be like, I am here because I have made some mistakes and I'm having a very difficult time.
Oh, bless.
I know. Yeah. It was really heartbreaking. And she was like, she was there for the very morning class. And then the teacher kind of like, it happened several times. We're just like completely unbidden. She would get up and make this announcement.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And then the teacher kind of took her aside into the hallway when we were going into break. And then she just never came back. So I think being part of space camp was maybe a little too soon for her.
Right, right, yeah.
But so, yeah, so the classes that we're taking, stuff that is teaching you, like, mindfulness, which I always thought was a hippy-dippy bullshit word. Turns
you and me
out
both.
It's a real thing. Oh,
it is? What does it mean?
And saying it out loud still sounds kind of hippy-dippy bullshit, but bear with me.
Mm-hmm.
It is being present in the current moment, as opposed to being stuck in the past. Which is, holy fuck, this terrible thing happened, and I'm so scared, and I'm so mad, and I'm mm-hmm. going to spin my wheels on this mm-hmm. thing that already happened. Mm-hmm. Or being, it's called future tripping, apparently, which is where you're like, something bad
future
is going
tripping.
To happen.
Future tripping? That's what it's called?
That's what
that's
it's called.
That's amazing.
Which is where you're anticipating the terrible thing that's going to happen in the future.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right.
So mindfulness means, hey, buddy, right now, right here, right now, where are you? You're sitting in your chair. What's the temperature? Oh, it's, well, it's actually a little bit warm because there's all this fire stuff going around. you know, what, how does your hair feel? Oh, well, I pulled my hair back into pigtails, and it's just focusing on the most immediate, present, grounded. This mm-hmm. is where you physically are. These are the sensations you can feel right now, mm-hmm. as opposed to any of your stupid thoughts that want to go to the past or want to go to the future.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so I can just echo that, Brad. So my wife and I took a series of mindfulness classes in LA. It being LA, it's very open and friendly and you know, everyone accepts it as being a worthwhile thing to try, you know? And so we took it, and like Erica, at first I was like, what is this hippy dippy? Like what, mm-hmm. you know, cause it sounds like something out of the '70s.
Yeah.
But then you try it and you realize, oh no, my brain actually does constantly want to review past mistakes mm-hmm. or anticipate how am I going to fail in the future? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so mindfulness is literally imagining that there is an object in front of you and it's either a thought of the past, thought of the future. This is one technique of mindfulness anyway. And you go, you literally set it, you push it to the side and say, I can't deal with that, right? Or this is not for right now. Mm-hmm. And then you focus on the physical presence, like my feet are touching the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I have a raisin in my mouth, or my saliva level in my mouth is very high or very low, or I'm hot or I'm cold, or I'm hearing sounds coming in from birds outside the window that you weren't listening to before because you were worried about the past or the future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting how when you start to train on it, and Erica, I'm sure, can speak on much better ways about it, but it really is helpful actually in grounding how much your brain wants to spin into the past or mm-hmm. worry about the future. And mm-hmm. you realize that there's actually something very pleasant about being very present, hyper-present, where you are right now and not mm-hmm. worrying about the past or worrying about the future.
Yeah. Well,
did you find that was the case with you, Erica, that kind of practice?
I didn't find it pleasant exactly. It was just a bit it was a reprieve from being in a storm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, okay. I can see that. Yes.
And just a little island where, okay, for 5 minutes, I do not feel like my brain is ripping itself apart.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a permission to be, it's almost a stillness for just 5 minutes. Yeah.
Yep. So we had classes in that. Mm-hmm. And classes in, because like everybody's coming in with way different experiences, way different backgrounds.
Yeah.
I think I was probably the only cartoonist.
yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if it was an entire room? What do you do? I'm a cartoonist. What do you do? I'm a cartoonist. What do you do? I'm a cartoonist.
Hey, we could have a convention. Let's set up some tables and everything goes upside down.
So different classes. My most favorite class was, I don't remember what it's called officially, but I called it arts and crafts.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay. And we would make collages about our feelings. And I loved it. And
really?
I never, yeah. Oh my God. I thought, okay. I remember the first time I sat down and they're like, find pictures that represent your current mental state. And I was like, this is some bullshit.
Right.
Why am I here?
Yeah.
And then they give you all these magazines that have already been like cut through a whole bunch already. Like they've been pawed through.
All the good emotions have been taken.
All you're left with are the shoes from Sears Roebuck. And you're like, wait, what? This is what's left?
Tires.
I'm feeling like a size 8.
Tires.
Buster Brown.
Just a Costco mailer. That's all you get. Sorry.
So begrudgingly, I start flipping through this magazine. Yeah. And I'm like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
And then I see a picture and I'm like, I kind of resonate with that picture. And then I keep flipping and I'm like, one. And if I cut these out and I put these together, it would be like a metaphor. And so I really get into making collages about my feelings and my thoughts. I remember once we had a teacher come in. She was like, okay, so either we can do collages or we could do a collaborative poem. And everybody was like, collage. Collage time was the highlight of the day. And then, so that's all the group stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm getting all derailed. And then we did have one-on-one therapy sessions, but it wasn't therapy in like, it wasn't like, let's sit down and tell me about your childhood.
Right, right.
It was more, okay, what specific stressors are you dealing with and what can we do to give you, what medications do you need right now? What techniques are going to be most effective for you? Because in the group therapy, and they told us in the beginning, like, listen, we are going to give you guys, we're going to throw everything against the wall and whatever sticks for you, hold on to it. And everything that doesn't apply to you, everything that doesn't resonate with you, that's okay. Let it go. Mm-hmm. Don't try to make it fit.
So is it kind of like how in, I don't know, elementary school, there's like different ways of teaching a child. Some kids learn by reading, some kids learn by hearing, some kids learn by doing, and they're basically giving you all the options and saying whatever works for you works. Yep. Okay, gotcha. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and they definitely weren't like, there is one correct way for you to do better. It's like,
we all
have such different brains that have such different traumas and personality disorders and depressions and like, there's so much going on in this room. So whatever works for you, grab it, hold on to it, adapt it.
Mm-hmm.
If we tell you something that kind of works for you, but this other part doesn't, like, make it your own.
And so was the emphasis ever on alleviating the problem, or was the emphasis on reacting to, in the most positive way possible, the problem?
More so the reacting part, but
because I'm sure there must be people that couldn't either control the circumstance or the circumstance has already happened. And so there's trauma from the circumstance, that kind of thing. So, okay. Yeah. That's what I was curious about. Okay,
going. So it's very much about learning coping mechanisms for dealing with very upsetting experiences, upsetting feelings, upsetting thoughts, and kind of teaching you how to rewire your brain. This example just popped into my mind. I don't know how accurate it is. Maybe it's really offensive. But you know how the first time you stub your toe, it's just the most all-consuming pain, and you can't imagine a time when you will not be in this pain anymore?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
And then as we age, the neck, like now as a 37-year-old, when I stub my toe, I get that rush of pain. And I'm like, God fucking damn it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, am I allowed to cuss?
Of course.
You can bleep it out. but I know that this pain is temporary.
Right.
I know from experience, like I just, you know this. So you know, okay, I just got to breathe through it. I know I've got about 30 seconds. Time it out, meter it out in my brain. You're going to get through this. And they're kind of teaching you how to do that with these feelings and experiences that are so overwhelming, and you don't know up from down, and you're just lost in it. And they're like, okay, buddy, this is going to last 30 seconds. Keep breathing. Yep. You're going to, and they're kind of teaching your brain how to reframe pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a really helpful metaphor. Thank you for that. No, that actually, for whatever reason, that really triggered with me. So thank you for that. Yeah.
You're welcome. Okay. So that's intensive outpatient. And
then some of it is like this pain or this moment might last a couple of days. It might last a couple of weeks. So here's some strategies to if not power through it, to tread water while it's happening so that you can eventually swim out, right? Is that the idea?
I thought of it as like they're giving you a life preserver while you're on an ocean, and maybe you're not going to get to exit the ocean. And because some people are just in situations or experiences that they can't leave. They're just, you're there. And how do you survive like that long-term?
Right.
And it's teaching you how to survive.
Yeah.
Right.
So Space Camp is like an immediate, you're on fire, let's put out the fire kind of a response.
Okay.
And it's temporary. You people go for like about 4 to 6 weeks typically. Okay. And it can be 1 to 5 days a week. Some people even go 6 days, but okay, whatever. And then after that, so that's the short-term solution. Like, okay, let's put the fire out. And now you have your scarred up, burnt body. And it's like, oh God, I'm not on fire anymore, but it still sucks.
Right.
And then what was done for me was I was enrolled in a DBT program. And that stands for Dialectical Behavioral Therapy, which is a cognitive behavioral psychotherapy.
What does that mean in real life, though?
In real life, okay. See, I always try to explain this, and then I start going, like, I get all confused on my words, so I wrote down a definition.
The only time I ever hear the word dialectical is, like, Socrates and Plato had that dialectical way of arguing in philosophy.
It is related, actually.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Well, I mean, I guess that's why it's the same word. Okay, this is the explanation I always try to say, and then I mangle it, but... So dialectical, it means two. What's the technical part mean?
Yeah, I think it's in philosophy, the way I learned dialectical was that it was like trying to get to a solution by talking it through and arguing back and forth, not arguing necessarily, but positing different positions to get to a truth.
And that's what DBT does, is it tries to say that there are multiple truths that you are experiencing in this moment, which again sounds kind of hippy dippy woo woo, but it's like,
but no, it's like, it's a version of like, you can hold two things to be true, right?
Yeah.
Like I can hold that Brad is my dear friend, and that I can also hold it as true that his feet smell terrible, right? Like those two truths. Him. I had to get a shot in. Yep. He got one in on me earlier. I got to pay it back. That's the rules, Erica.
It's not my feet.
That was good.
Brad and I are so helpful to this discussion. This is great.
No, you are actually, because I never bothered to look up what dialectical means. I just knew it's like die, so that means two. So die to something. Well, anyway, so it's holding two thoughts, two emotions, two feelings at the same time, which is like you have your immediate emotional response to something, which is like, I'm mad.
Right.
Somebody cut me off in traffic. I'm mad. Mm-hmm. And you could just be stuck there and think, well, that person cut me off because they're a bad person, because they were trying to piss me off, and they're like, I should honk at them. Well, I mean, if it's dangerous, I guess you should honk. But I mean, like, I'm going to honk in anger just because I'm pissed. I'm going to flip them off. A dialectical approach to this is to say, yes, you are angry, That's valid. You get to feel that anger. What other reasons could have triggered this? Mm-hmm. Do you think maybe this driver was inattentive? Do you think they were going to miss their turnoff, so they had to take this emergency move? Maybe they're just a really shitty driver like I am, because I only drive twice a year, and I did my once annual drive earlier, and I cut this guy off. Matt was like, "Why did you do that?" And I was like, "I didn't mean to."
Right.
So like, maybe they're just a really bad driver like me. Well, anyway, and so it's you try to take a step back from your immediate emotion, and you honor your emotion. And you say it's valid that instead of saying like, "Well, I shouldn't be mad. Being mad is unproductive." It's like, no, you are mad. That's the truth. That is your truth.
Yeah.
You get to experience that. What is the most productive way to move forward? What other reasons could this have happened? So, and that's dialectical. DBT. Yeah.
And so the DBT sessions were also group, or was that one-on-one?
Oh, okay. So that... same scenario, actually. Okay. We had a group situation, but it was much smaller than space camp groups. Right. This group was more like six plus people. Probably about six-ish people. And we would meet in a conference room. And it was only 2 hours a day, as opposed to the previous 9 to 3:30.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that was once a week. And then Wednesdays. And then on Fridays, I would come in and I would have a one-on-one with my individual therapist person, who, again, this one was a bit more therapy, where you're like, "So my childhood," but the focus was more on applying the DBT skills we were learning in group to your specific situation to really hone that in.
Right.
And so twice a week I would take the bus out to the hospital, and I would spend these hours there and learning how to kind of rewire my brain, how to rethink about situations. Here's the description that I wrote down. DBT is a crash course in understanding how your thoughts, feelings, and behavior influence each other, with a focus on regulating emotions, being mindful, present in the moment, and learning to accept pain. Mm. And there's a quote that I am writing from my memory, but I didn't actually find the actual quote. Mm-hmm. But it's, "You can't avoid pain in your life, but you can reduce the amount of suffering you have around it."
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So it's not like, "Oh, do DBT and you'll never be sad again." It's like...
Right. It's accepting that you are sad, but mm-hmm. how much, I guess, is it a way of like redirecting how much it will impact you? That sadness will own you, I guess is another way of saying it.
How much it will own you, how you incorporate it into the way that you think.
Right.
Because like if you got cheated on and you were really devastated that you got cheated on, and then you just got stuck for years and like, "This person cheated on me," and you're just stuck in this hamster wheel
because now you are actively reintroducing that pain into your mind too.
Is that you're really
reliving
suffering.
That moment? Yeah.
There's the moment of finding out you were cheated on, mm-hmm. and then there's spending years dwelling on it. And those years dwelling on it, that's the suffering.
Right. Okay. Yeah. In month two, you start this process, and then how soon did you start to see tiny? Not rays of light, but like where the practice started to help you in day-to-day life, where you're like, "Okay, I handled that moment now better than I would have 6 months ago."
Mm-hmm. It's funny because like universally, the students all said it took about a month. The first 4 weeks, and they tell you, just show up to class.
Yeah.
You don't need to learn this. You don't need to do this. Like, all we're asking of you is just show up to class.
Yeah.
And so I would just show up to class and, I felt like I'm hopeless. I'm never going to get better.
Right.
And then about a month in, I remember the sensation of realizing that some minor thing happened and I navigated it. And
it wasn't a triggering event for what would normally spiral into a whole thing. Yeah, okay.
Well, and it wasn't even like a huge thing. It wasn't even like, this would have ruined my day. It's just like some mundane thing happened. And normally I would have felt sad about it or something. Right. And instead, it just, I found myself redirecting how I thought about it. And I was like, holy shit. Holy shit, I can do this. So DBT lasts 6 months. And so twice a week, 6 months, I'd bus out to the hospital, and it rewired my brain, basically. And I'm still working on it. A girl in class and I exchanged information, and we, once quarantine happened, we got in contact, and it was like, hey, do you want to do DBT together? Okay. And so we've got our workbooks that we got from the class. Oh, so there's homework, and it's all written out. Mm-hmm. And we're just sitting down, and once a week on the phone, we go through a couple pages of the workbook, and then we assign homework from the worksheets. And then next week we check in and we're like, here's the homework I did. And it's been really, really helpful to like, it keeps those skills fresh in your mind. Mm-hmm. And then also stuff that I'd already forgotten. It's like, oh, right, we did learn that. Or what did that mean? And then we go and research, and yeah, so we keep that going.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And I think both Brad and I don't want to go too long into the show without saying thank you for sharing this, because I think too often, and it depends on what kind of family you grew up in and what kind of culture you come from, and broadly speaking, even in just broader American culture, is that we don't talk about it this enough in a way that makes it acceptable to say, listen, each one of us has an 8-pound chemically, electrically firing machine in our skull that can sometimes, because either the biology of that 8-pound machine or the patterns that it has learned, sometimes can misfire. And it is okay to talk about it. And it's okay to say, hey, how can we as fellow human beings help each other strategize way out, or you know, find medication that can help? Like, I personally think that it could be such a benefit to humanity if we could take the stigma off of that. So it is. I'm so thankful to you, just on a person-to-person level, for sharing that with. Because I'm sure right now there's someone out there going, God, you know what? Maybe it's time for me to look at this in a different light. You know,
dude. Even people who aren't traumatized and who don't have personality disorders, like, people should be taking DBT in school. I don't know why these skills aren't, like, because as we're learning them, it seems so basic. It's like, yeah, what? Why don't I already know this? This seems so fundamental.
Right. And I, like you said, I don't know that I've had a pretty lucky trauma-free life, but I found that mindfulness sessions really woke me up to patterns that I thought were perfectly healthy coping strategies that maybe there were better ways to going through my daily life, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, even for folks that are not in their worst moment, it's nice to be able to reach out and say, what are better strategies for coping through, you know, artistic struggles or a moment of trauma, like, you know. So anyway, I want to keep going with your story, but I just want to thank you, halfway through here, to say thank you for sharing, because it's a gift of sharing what you've gone through with other people, because I know for a fact that there will be somebody out there who will say, oh, Jesus, it's time for me to seek a little help, you know?
Or maybe they didn't even have the words in their vocabulary.
Right.
They didn't know what a DBT was. They didn't know what mindfulness, you know, they didn't even have the words to address what was going on. And now they do.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know? I keep worrying that people will think like I got into a cult or something, because my answer to everything is I'm like, oh, you should try DBT. Oh, did you know DBT says this? Oh, da 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 da. But like, it is so helpful, and it's all like kind of sciencey. It's not just woo woo stuff.
Well, and it's also like I look at my own family history, and so many of my older uncles, grandparents, great grandparents, like, that generation was self-medicating with alcohol, you know, and that was not a healthy route, you know? And so whatever route you find, with your psychologist or psychiatrist, God, it's certainly better than what our grandparents would do, which was keep it way down buried. And how about 17 more beers tonight? You know, that kind of thing. Because some people in my family drank themselves to an early grave, you know, and that is not a great way to go through life. But keep going, Eric. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was gonna say a number of addicts and alcoholics were in DBT with me, and also Space Camp. So yeah, like if you're having substance issues and DBT, it fixes everything.
It's the thing. So now,
I'm not in a cult.
Let's bring this conversation full circle. 13 months ago, you were writing in saying, I'm burnt out. I'm in a really bad way. You go through and you address your mental health in a forthright way. Talk to us about where Erica Moen is today.
I'm sitting in a sun-dappled room with
That's the mindful answer.
Brad, look at you and I on screen versus Erica.
Yeah.
There's two hobgoblins here talking. She is in a sun-dappled room. We're over here going, ah, can I get back to cartooning? From our caves of darkness.
If it turns out that one of us is hiding a ring, no one's surprised looking at the screen right now.
Throw it in, Mr. Frodo! Throw it in! That's what Brad's saying to me right now. Okay, but go ahead, Erica. You were saying.
Okay, I want to say, like, I am in a way, way better place. And I'm not cured. I am not cured of being bipolar. I'm not cured of like, I still have trauma triggers. I still struggle. I still have really scary, bad thoughts on a regular basis. My suffering is so low now. Just being able to recognize when I have a painful thought or a painful experience and saying like, yep, that's painful. Put it over here. We're doing this now. Yep. What do you need to restructure how you feel about this? Like I remember about halfway through DBT, I met up with some friends who hadn't seen me in some months. And they said, like, you look like a different person. And it's not like I was in a great mood and being the life of the party. Mm-hmm. They just said like, yeah, you look like you have color in your skin again. You know, there's life in your eyes again.
Yeah. Well, it's like you said with your body when you were like throwing up bile and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Because we are a holistic system as a machine, if your brain is misfiring that much and you are currently living that suffering, it's going to affect your body and vice versa, you know? So it's lovely to, and I would actually concur. I haven't seen you on screen, granted, but I haven't seen you in a long time. And you do look... I want to say content is the way I would describe it. You know what I mean? Like, that's the way I would describe your face right now is that...
it's because I'm talking to you guys.
Well, that's nice.
Anybody feels a little bit better looking at us, too. It's like, okay, maybe I'm not doing so bad.
Oh, boy, look at that Brad Geiger. Oh, God.
You know, they always say it could be worse. And
there's a worse path to really walk, and it's Brad Geiger sitting in that dark den over there, whatever he is.
Oh, man,
looking like he's walked through Mordor over there. All right. what was I going to say?
I look great.
Yes, we can stay on that topic for a while.
Let's swing back around on that.
Let's build on that.
That I was concerned about is you were talking about burnout, and I really enjoy Ojoy sex toy and its food equivalent, Osoytec sex toy. I really enjoy them, and I know
a lot of cooking tips for salt-based. Oh my God, that's funny. Oh, soy. Oh God.
So we've got the books around the house. We just We just leave them laying around so the kids discover them, and then they're like, "Oh, look at all this information," you know. But we just love. We're like, "Oh yeah, that happened to be on the bookshelf," you know. You take a look at it; it's good stuff. And I love that you did a book that was just all sex education. That has me absolutely transfixed. But for a while, you know, when we're talking burnout during the show, Dave and I were talking about, you know, different ways of, we were talking about the pivot, we were talking about this and that. I guess the question I've got is, what's next for you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And let me say, when I heard the episode where you guys answered my question, I was so touched, and I downloaded and I saved that episode and I listened to it multiple times to hear what you had to say to me. And it really, like, it was like a little comfort blanket for me just to hear my comics dads.
Stop playing my heart like this. I'm back on the backpack with the snacks.
And it was good advice. I know everything I just talked about was like trauma, and you guys are like, find something that makes you happy. But it is related, though. Because it's true. Like you told me to find anything that's sparking joy in your life, and to be kind to yourself, and to say, you know what, I'm not in a good place. Yeah. That's true. Don't beat yourself up for not being in a good place. Don't punish yourself for not enjoying the work that you've literally spent your entire life doing. It's okay to be underperforming and to be kind and to forgive yourself for that and to let yourself have these down periods, even if they last a while.
Can I ask two things? So one of them is in terms of being kind to yourself, one of the reasons I think that's so important, and that's lovely that helped you in that moment. And the fact that you downloaded the MP3, that's lovely and kept that.
That makes me very proud.
That's really, I know, that really moves me.
Yeah, I got it in a special folder.
Oh, God, my heart, stop it. But one of the things that I've learned about being kind to myself is that, gosh, it sucks to be sad, but it's even worse to be sad about being sad.
Because
then I become sad spiral. So like if I'm kind to myself, I at least can break that spiral of
compounding it.
Whatever it is, self-hate or self-pity or self-insecurity, whatever I'm feeling in that moment. So I'm glad that was helpful to you. Second, I think I'm speaking for Brad. I would like to learn what we could have done better or what was not helpful to you in that moment. Like I would like to learn for other people that might ask this question of us, like what could we have said that was different that we didn't say or said too much of or emphasized incorrectly so that we can learn?
Okay, this is not the exact answer. This is not the answer to that exact question. But there was, when you guys first said, like, find something that sparks joy in your life. And in my head, I was like, I have no capacity to feel joy right now.
Right.
And then one of you said, but that's all well and good if you feel like you can't feel joy right now. Like, well, that's not helpful. And I was like, oh, yeah, thanks for... I know you just asked me to offer constructive criticism. And instead, it's just like, that was... really helpful though. Like acknowledging that you can't always.
This is the best kind of constructive criticism, the kind that's not criticism at all.
Erica, tell me more about my eyes. That's great. Yeah,
So I guess like your approach was very much like from the creative standpoint and was completely accurate in that. I was definitely coming at this from a point of like severe mental health issues and that takes intensive mental health intervention, which can't be answered by like pivot your work. Well, I mean, but like, yeah, I did have to change my work. So, okay. Let me tell you how we work now. Matt and me, not the royal we. So we did finish the books, which is amazing. And
what were the titles? What were the titles of those two books?
Those two books.
Listen to Marketing Joe over here. And what are those ISBNs? And where can I find them?
I'm like, what did we call those books? I just call them the bad years.
You put that out of your mind.
Okay, the first one is Drawn to Sex, Our Bodies and Health, which is the sequel to Drawn to Sex, The Basics, which is the book that you're leaving around the house. And we just got the advanced copy of Drawn to Sex, Our Bodies and Health, and it looks so good. Yes. And I'm looking through it, and it's just like the nice thing about making a book when you're in just a spiral of despair is that you don't remember making it. And then you look at this finished book and you're like, hey, this is pretty good.
whoever did this knew what they were talking about. Well, your line is so kinetic and energetic that reading your comics is really a joyful experience because it comes through on the page.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So that's a sex health book, and it's all about like STIs and all the ways your body can like stop functioning with your reproductive bits and permanent sterilization, birth control, that kind of stuff. So yeah, first book was about like how your bodies fit together to do sex stuff, and this one is like how to deal with it when stuff goes wrong.
right.
Okay.
And then that's coming out from Limerence Press, which is an imprint of Oni Press. And it should be out in later this year, October, November, I think.
coming right up.
Okay, wow, not that far. Yeah,
no, really, really soon. And then the second book, and this is what I call the big book, and it's called Let's Talk About It, and it's coming out from Random House Graphic. Ooh. And it is very different. It's not Ojoy Sex Toy. It's a collection of stories from teenagers who are find themselves in new situations that involve relationships or sexual stuff, and they don't know what they're supposed to do in this situation.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And so it's a guidebook for teenagers about how to navigate these relationship, interpersonal, possibly sexual scenarios that, like, okay, so you go to sex ed class and they're like, this is how you roll a condom on a banana. Mm-hmm. And if you get an STI, your life is over. And you're like, okay, right. Great. Very helpful. But then you come out of that class and it's like, how do you get to the point where you need to know how to roll a condom on a banana? Like, how do you go from, I have a crush on somebody to, I guess we need a condom? Like, how do you get from point A to point B?
Right.
And this book is like, how do you talk to somebody else you're interested in? How do you talk about birth control? What is the vocabulary you need to have in order to have these conversations with each other? How do you consent? How do you take back your consent? How do you be, how do you accept a rejection gracefully? Mm-hmm. How do you, what do you need to know about yourself in order to make informed decisions to go forward with being in relationships with other people? Yeah. And what kinds of relationships do you want to be with other people? And anyway, it's the big book. And that's coming out in 2021, I think.
March 9th, 2021.
Oh,
from what
wow.
I can see.
Okay, March.
Oh my God, Brad's available as a marketing consultant.
You're talking, as you're talking about it, I'm like, I've got a 14-year-old and an 18-year-old, and my 18-year-old has a girlfriend now. This is another book that's going to be just left hanging around the house, because this is something that is not only important, but some stuff that they're navigating currently, I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this book is actually made for teenagers, with teenagers in mind. Like, yeah. Ojoy sex toy stuff is kind of made for whatever, grown-up-y
adults
kind of people.
Adults who are on their, they're already well on their journey kind of thing.
Yeah, and like, yeah. I know teenagers are reading it, but I'm not like, this is a resource for teenagers.
Right.
Whereas,
right.
Let's Talk About It, from Random House Graphics, coming out March 9th, 2021, is specifically made for teenagers to talk to teenagers about, like, your scenarios you might find yourself in.
By the way, Random House, big imprint. So that's going out to a lot of folks. That's a big deal.
It's my first, like, big boy book.
God, now my heart is drifting back to Erica of 13 months ago. No wonder you were just like, oh, shit, this is so much. I don't know that I could do all this.
It was a lot.
So jumping in for Brad's question about future, like, will you ever again, as a strategy, take on two books at once?
No.
Yeah.
No.
What kind of strategies are you, like, thinking about that for the future, about how to take on projects, how to consult with people to take on projects, how to plan out?
Okay. Well, so the thing is, like, even at the time, Matt and I knew it was crazy to take on two books.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, we had already committed to doing the Drawn to Sex sequel. That was already on the schedule. Mm-hmm. But then Random House was like, hey, can we give you a dump truck of money to make this book about a thing you've always wanted to do? And it was like, I can't say no
you
to
can't that. Know
that.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So we knew it was going to be hard. We knew it was crazy to take it on. But it's just like, we felt like, I can't turn this down.
Sometimes you
I like
also
that there's
have
a truck
strike.
Parked outside and you're like, I can't turn down that truck. It's
right?
a dump truck of money.
It says Brinks right on the truck.
That
has never
house.
Been
I've
down this
take
street.
The truck. Yeah. I gotta take the truck.
Beep, beep, beep.
All right, just open the garage. We'll figure it out later.
However, going forward, if I'm given an incredible opportunity again, I know that I can't take every incredible opportunity. Mm-hmm. I do have to turn it down. Like, I do have a limit. I knew I had a limit back then, but I thought, like, but I can can push it, right? And it's like, no, I have a really hard limit and I can't push past it. So I guess my big lesson is turn down dream projects.
or at least I would imagine future Erica will probably have a very heart-to-heart conversation with an editor of like, yeah, we could turn it in third quarter of 2022, but maybe could we do fourth quarter or first quarter of 2023 instead? You know, like that kind of thing where
you're
like,
right.
Let's set some realistic expectations for when I could do this kind of a thing, you know?
Yeah. So I guess more like the deadlines were fine, but they weren't fine for where I was at. And I think going forward, I would set more realistic expectations for where I'm actually at.
Yeah.
And shout out to my publisher. They did see I was not doing well, not because I told them, but because I told the internet. And like they did come back and they tried to be kinder to me. They tried to help me. And I was like, nah.
<It's fine." laughs> I got this.
This is not on them. This is on me.
Right, yeah. Well, and that's the thing that actually is worth mentioning because I've seen, in fact, Brad and I were laughing at it this weekend. Mm-hmm. I've seen cartoonists really passive-aggressively, clearly talking to their editor on Twitter.
Oh, no.
And it's like, well, you know, I could turn in the book now, or you know what, I could turn in a good book 3 months from like, just talk to your editor, for God's sakes. Don't do this on Twitter. Don't do this on Twitter. Like, what are you doing?
No. Because on Twitter, that is not what I was doing to my editor.
No, I'm not accusing you of that. I'm just saying there's a better way to do it, and the way is, they're human beings. Like, the reason why there is a schedule is they're trying to plan out literally when to print the book, when to plan out the marketing. So it's not like they're inhuman monsters. They'll work with you, but like, talk to them. Don't do passive-aggressive on Twitter. It's not great. It's not a good look.
My editing team was trying to help me and I was saying, no, thank you, sir.
Yep. Right.
And
how much,
I mean, and take a moment to appreciate what that says about you as a creator and as somebody that they want to work with, that your work is so good that they're actually willing to reach out and say, you're worth this. Let's talk about that deadline. Let's talk about how we can make this better. That says volumes about you as a creator, that they're willing to do that.
Right, right.
I think they would have done that for any of their creators, though. You know,
You hope. Sometimes certain editors are not the greatest, or the imprints are not the greatest. Yeah. It sounds like you had good ones.
Shout out to Random House Graphics. That is a good team of people.
It says volumes about them as well.
Well, in terms of... Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I'm so sorry.
I was going to say, so Matt and I did change our work schedule also.
Yeah.
Yes.
So got the books off our plates. Yes. We are not doing any books next year. We are taking a year off of books, which is very exciting. And so with Oh Joy Sex Toy, it's a comic that updates weekly. And we would be working on it, 4 weeks. And then when I was having troubles, we've tried to alternate. Change it so like we'd work on it 3 weeks and have 1 week off for me to kind of recover.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing now that everything's done and dusted, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks where we work on Oh Joy Sex Toy, 2 weeks off of Oh Joy where we get to work on whatever else we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
And sometimes I use that to make autobio comics for my Patreon. And this last 2 weeks, I just did house stuff. I just worked on the house. And how does that, like, that's all well and good for us to do that, but like, what about our weekly update schedule?
Yeah.
Well, we're in a unique position where we work with guest artists and we hire guest artists. And it, like, things would be easier for Matt if we only had to use one guest artist a month, because working with a guest artist is a lot more hand-holding, a lot more back and forth, whereas him and me working on a comic, like, we have a system. It's down. Like, he knows I'll just get it done in a week. And with guest artists, like, it takes multiple weeks to get one comic.
Right.
So having to use a higher volume of guest artists is more work in one regard, but we have now built it into the system that we are alternating one Oh Joy comic by us, next week guest comic, next week Oh Joy comic by us, next week guest comic. And that's just the schedule we're doing now, even though in some ways it's a bit more work, but in wifely ways, it's been really, really helpful that I can do 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off.
Great.
And so that's how we restructured our workflow.
And that also leaves a little bit of time for you to do some other things that you enjoy, because I know I keep seeing embroidery on your social media, and I see that you love to garden.
Yeah.
And those things can be very kind of therapeutic as well, because it's a little bit meditative. It's
Wait, let him get there. Don't help America. Let him get there on his own. Hold on. He needs to learn. He needs to learn. Make him get there on his own.
Not
this is
meditative. Meditative. You can meditate.
Nope, don't help America. Don't.
You can see it on my lips. You can see I want to say it.
Meditative.
Oh my God. It's like watching a toddler learning how to walk.
Very contemporary.
Oh my God. That was delightful. Sorry. I shouldn't have picked on you, but I was enjoying that moment. No, you need those moments. Like I, in my own adult life, I've learned that if I don't recharge those batteries with stuff like that, then I, not only does the work not get done, it really falls apart even when it does get done. Like it's just not as good. It's not as joy filled. It's so, gardening for me in the pandemic has really been helpful in terms of just, it feels oddly positive to work on life in a time of death, you know? And so gardening is really helpful for that.
But, how are your tomatoes?
They're amazing.
Yeah.
I accidentally killed. So I planted like 9 different types of tomatoes and only 4 have survived, but they're 4 very different kinds of tomatoes. And it's really satisfying to eat one and then eat a different kind of tomato and be like, oh, it's a very different tomato. Anyway, so that's a great part of the show. my tomatoes are great. Thank you. So going forward, you have strategies in place that you're working on. And like you said, this is not like you're like, I've reached the finish line and everything's great and it's everything's hunky dory. It's basically redirecting yourself onto a road where you know there's still more mountains to climb, more hills to climb, but now hopefully you have some strategies in place and a willingness to go back to new resources possibly if that's necessary, because it may be the chance or the case that because we're all changing beings and there may come a day where the therapies that you've learned in the past aren't as applicable or aren't as helpful. And so there's also probably a willingness now on your part to be like, I'm ready to go back to learn something new or try something different. And that's also wonderful. It's a recognition that it's not a finished journey. It is a journey, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm going to keep stubbing my toe and you need to not have your life fall apart because of it.
Right. Yeah. Well, honestly, the greatest thing that I can say is a genuine thank you. Honestly, thank you for coming on to share this because, on just a human level, it's lovely to see you doing and thriving, doing well and thriving. And also, I know for a fact that it's helpful for people to hear it. And so taking away any stigma about talking about it, because it doesn't need to have a stigma on it. We're all, like you said, we are all going to be stubbing our toe in some way, shape or form. And how great that we can say to people, there are resources out there and you don't have to live the way you're living.
Yeah.
That's a great thing. And so I personally am really thankful. I can't speak for Brad, but I know, I know that he is, I mean, I shouldn't speak for Brad,
but God knows he tries.
Brad feels very differently about this.
I just want him to get back and say meditative again. That was great. I just wanted to...
Erica, do you remember, it had to have been Comic-Con International years and years ago. Mm-hmm. It was you and I and a whole bunch of web cartoonists. I feel like we were on the second floor of some building or an upper floor and off in a room. And we all were, I don't know what we were doing there. We didn't belong there. We just all took over the room and sat down in chairs in a semicircle and we're talking. And you and I talked about house stuff, like buying a house and you might have been just about to buy your first house. We were talking about home ownership. It doesn't really matter any of the details. What I want to tell you is this: for 20 years in comics, I've talked to a lot of people. I've had very few conversations, and that was one of them. For me, was talking to you, and I always have a really happy spot in my heart when I remember how delightful it was just to have a conversation with you and not do the whole, well, how's your place on the floor? Do you think this year is better than last year? All the convention stuff. We had an actual conversation and Boy, oh boy. I got to tell you, I reflect on that several times a year and get a smile every time I do. And it's an absolute joy to have you on the show again. And we,
oh, my heart.
Well, and here's here's how you know that means something to Brad, Erica, is that I talk to Brad for an hour every week on the show. He has yet to say that to me.
Yeah.
It's been years, years of talking. He always says, all right, well, another hour of jaw with Dave. Didn't really talk about anything. No real conversation there.
You know,
and then as we hang up, he goes, Erica, and then he hangs up. And I'm like, what?
It's my rosebud. It's my rosebud.
It's this rosebud.
It's the level to which everyone has to attain, and someone has to live up to at some point. And as for Dave, he's still trying. But listen, I don't want it to be another 13 months until we have you back on Comic Lab. This has been an absolute delight.
Absolutely.
And this Erica Moen, her Patreon is at patreon.com/Erica Moen. That's with a K, Erika Moen. And the two books that you've got to look out for, Drawn to Sex 2, coming out November 14th, 2020. And Let's Talk About It, The Teen's Guide to Sex, Relationships, and Being a Human, coming out in March 2021. And you had better bet your bottom dollar that you'll see those links in the podcast notes so you can go and get yours reserved right now. And honest to goodness, if you've got kids, one parent to another, the move is that you don't hand them the book because they don't take what's handed to them. You just leave it laying around where they discover it. And it's led to so many great discussions. And I've got, my kids can talk to me about any sex-related, relationship-related topic without shame, without worry about recrimination. And Erica's books, I think, played a part in that.
Oh, well, you know, the trick is you tell them, don't read this book. This book is not for you.
And then walk out of the room and go make dinner.
That's right. That's right. Hide it.
Mm-hmm. Put it on the top shelf.
Yep.
And you say, you don't go on the top shelf.
You stay away from that book.
That's what my wife says about the peanut M&Ms in the pantry. And unfortunately, same result. Same result. I go right for them. That is an empty box of peanut M&Ms.
Absolutely.
Erica, you were wonderful. Thank you for coming on the show, and we will talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for your show. I literally listen to it every single week, and you always make me laugh out loud. And in my dark time, like, I was listening to you guys every single week, and it was a little moment of joy in my life. It was the spark joy. You guys spread my joy.
When you had no spark, we gave you a little spark. Yeah. Listen, there's no better compliment we could ever get.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you are a wonderful person doing wonderful work, and thank you for being in this world. And thank you for coming on the show this week. Well, on that note, I have to give a huge shout out and a thank you to our sponsor for this show. And I have to say, this was a lovely, lovely talk. And so it's really nice to have them as sponsors.
Yeah.
The good folks at Wacom at WACOM.com, the makers of the new Wacom One. Brad and I have said it before, and we will say it again. They are in our studios and used with love and with great appreciation. So it is delightful to have Wacom as our sponsor.
Absolutely. Thank you, Wacom. Makers of the Wacom One, WACOM.com. Well, you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my friend Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my good friend Dave Kellett, the co-director of Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode and all episodes was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode.
And Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that like Brad trying to say meditative. patreon.com/comiclab.
So I was right. It was meditative. I had no idea. I thought, I didn't think it was a Tate. I think it was, I thought it was a
Tate. I didn't think it was a Tate.
I thought it was meditative. I didn't know it was meditative.
Meditative?
Meditative.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know anymore. Now you've got me wondering.
It may be one of those words that's impossible to say in the English language.
Well, or...
Like in all those science fiction movies, they say, oh, you can't pronounce my name in English. You know,
yeah,
might be one of those.
No way to say it with your tongue. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a couple words like that where I have only ever read them in my life. I've never spoken them out loud. Mm-hmm. And then you go to say them out loud in like mixed company and everyone turns to you like you're the dumbest person alive. And they're like,
yes,
no,
yes.
The word, David, is ajou. And you're like, oh, it's not ajus? It's not ajus? Nope, it's ajou. Oh. David, the word is hors d'oeuvre, not horse door. Oh, I've never pronounced it out loud.
Oh, God, what was I talking? What was it? We were ordering food, and your wife was driving, and I was saying it was some kind of rice dish, and I was saying, oh, yeah, get me that, and it was confrillo.
Oh,
anyway. Oh. Do you remember what it was?
No.
But anyway, it was one of those LLO words. That
like frijoles or something?
It's something like that. And I was instead of...
Oh, and you said frijoles or something.
And I was not turning the L's into Y's like you would do. And she almost drove off the road. She goes, you are driving me crazy. Dave, the name of the food was pico de gallo.
Pico de gallo. So much like the fine winemakers up in Northern California, the little pico de gallo.
Mwah, the French.
Mwah, oh my God, what a callback. We haven't thought about that guy in forever. Mwah, the French. Mm. I would be curious if people have gone back, that are like discovering the show now, have people gone back and listened to the first episodes where...
That's a good question. There's so much good stuff back there.
But that runner stayed with us, even in our friendship, for months.
Yes.
We would answer the phone and the other woman would go, no, the French. There is a California winery mixing a fine wine. Oh, the French.
Isn't she going to say something?
Are we taking that back from the top? All right. Oh, the French. Oh, God.